Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And Sophia Cordova.
Yay! Haven't had a guest host in a while.
This is special.
Margaret Tedesco sent us in her top pick, highly recommended pick of the season. On March 12th through the 18th, there's going to be a show at SF MoMA. Hustlers and Empires. Do you know this one?
Oh my God. Love Michelle Handelman.
Oh yeah, great.
I'm so excited for the show.
And the performance is March 17th at 6 p.m. Also, good news. There's all the auctions coming up, everybody.
Oh,
you
yeah.
got the Headlands auction. That's Wednesday, June 6th at 5:30 for individual sponsors and 6:30 for general admission. Also, news update about the Headlands. Carrie Hott's on the board now. So if you're trying to get some free tickets to that auction, you know who to contact.
Hi, Carrie.
Yes. Conrad Guevara and Marcela Pardo Ariza have a show together at
cool.
T-Morrow Projects opening on March 10th.
Wow. That's a good duo.
I hope I said that correctly.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I want to say the time is at 5:30.
That's a weird time.
Six?
I'm gonna go with six, having no knowledge of the show or when it opens.
Or earlier in the afternoon. Look that
2:30
up.
p.m.
I'll put a link in the underworld.
Yeah, I mean, editorial
Have
note.
Have you seen any shows?
Editorial note on shows I've seen. It's that since grad school, like, you know, right after grad school, I was in this, like, fever kind of, you got to go to everything all the time and, like, make the scene. And I think, like, kind of as, like, a violent reaction to that sort of thirst, I really don't go to that many shows unless I feel, like, super jazzed. Like, if I feel really jazzed about it or, you know, it's a homies show.
Oh,
but
yeah, you have
I
to.
Will say that this, in that latter category, that's also something I'm really jazzed about, is the new show at SOEX is actually super good.
Oh, good.
Went to the opening Friday. Mick Gaspé curated it. What's it called again? Something
like,
Possibilities. Look it
tangible.
Up.
Tangible.
It starts with
is
an
it
S.
Probabilities?
Katie Doremi's in it. Super rad painter.
Charlie Leese made this insane metal sculpture for it that
and
is just
like, worth.
And it
goes into the bathroom. Oh, it's so good. It's really good. So that both, you know, proves my point about shows and also gives me something to talk about. A show I went to.
Probably shouldn't get into it, but there's been some real unrest there at SOEX, but we're not going to get into it. But I will say I checked the website and half the staff is gone.
Juicy.
That's so weird. Let's move right along. Okay, now Charlie Leese recently shaved a lot of his hair off.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes when I'll see someone I know out in the art world and they've very drastically changed their hair, I won't recognize
you
them
know
anymore.
Who they are. That's
Do
so
I have
funny.
Face blindness?
Well, I mean, Charlie is like a real trendsetter. I feel like he always has a new do. Wait, I also want to shout out, can we talk about a reading that I
went
to?
Yeah, please.
So Krupskaya is this really great poetry endeavor. It's Brandon Brown, Stephanie Young.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm so sorry I'm forgetting the third person. But they just had, I know, I'm really sorry. And I just met them and they're really great. But they just had a release of three new chapbooks. Bonus, the artwork is all done by Sibel.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a real win-win. But yeah, it was Julian Brolaski, Wendy Trevino, and Lisa Robertson. And it was so, so good.
What was the seating like?
It was like, it was in the back of Alley Cat Books. So it was like stark, bright, and, you know, like mismatched seats, which I usually like. But I got like a bad one. So like my butt was hurting halfway through.
I am happy to be able to sit at a reading.
Yeah, you gotta
Can't
sit.
Stand.
Oh, you gotta sit. No, they had wine and chairs, so it was like a very civilized affair. The Julian Brolaski was incredible, really like incredible writing. And Lisa Robertson is in France, I guess, so she sent a recording of herself reading it.
Oh,
and you would think that would be like a flop. Like there's a computer and we're all like, kind of looking at it because it wasn't even video. But it was amazing. It was like this beautiful, weird, really funny reading. We were all like with our eyes closed. It was like,
whoa.
It was like a real scene, but in a super great way. Yeah, so that's a really cool thing that I went to.
Was it like poems?
Mm-hmm. Poems. They could be
I love
they could be
poetry.
Different shapes. I'm new to loving poetry. That's the thing. I'm obsessed of late with poets and punks. They're like my new.
Oh, sweet.
I mean, I grew up kind of as a punk, but you know, then I like was like, well, no, I want to be all about R&B now. But but now I'm back. R&B punk. I'm kidding. But poets and punks, they're cool.
I saw a show over there at Minnesota Street Project, and I even fucking got the name of it on a piece of paper.
You did it.
I know. It was called Somatic Gesture, which I feel like is very close to the title of whatever that SOEX show was.
And I was just in a show that closed at Pro Arts called Somatic Signification. So we're just in a real
Christ.
Place. That's a lot of sibilance.
Sibilance. Gotta tell you, went to the opening. Amanda Carreri was there, who is moved to Cincinnati, but mm-hmm. it was back for the show. And didn't see any of the work, except that's I did see Amanda's thing because she was standing in front of it. Looked great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Jada Feo. There was a Jada Feo piece in the show.
Cool.
What's the show?
I don't know. What's it called again? Somatic.
Somatic?
Possibility.
Gesture. And it was all artists of all age ranges, living and dead.
Yeah, clearly.
Again.
Yeah, you guys were talking about dead people last time.
Go check it out. I don't know. I just talked to Amanda Carreri the whole time about Ohio.
I'm glad
Ohio.
You saw her.
Yeah.
How's Ohio?
Oh,
what's
bad.
The word?
It's
oh,
not
shit.
Good. No, she said it was great. Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
She said it was great. I have bad feelings about it since the election and how red it was.
I mean, sure.
Again.
Yeah.
I think I went a little too long talking about Jamie Farr, who played Klinger in MASH because he was from Toledo. And that was not relevant to the conversation. And sometimes I really need to rein it in.
I don't know. That sounds ideal.
Okay,
we
good.
Should go to openings together. That's what I do. I like nervously talk about things. Cause
I just go
openings
off.
Openings are kind of awful, right?
Yeah. Well, this one was like, it was, you know, it wasn't like a blasting, you know, art people with their top hats
and monocles as they are wont to
it
do.
It was like mainly cool people.
That's
nice. Don't know. I just sometimes like my brain gets in a groove.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It's not, they're not horrible because of what's happening outside of my skin. It's like inside
exactly.
my head.
Exactly.
It's just screaming.
Yes. I think it's the lighting is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The concrete floors.
Turn the lights down.
No one.
No one's looking at the
down.
Work. They'll look at it later. You can turn the lights on then.
Exactly. Oh, speaking of galleries, we had some listener questions a couple of weeks ago. I thought maybe you could, you know, get a little perspective on some of these issues.
Okay.
Are there any galleries that you refuse to go to?
That's, when you say it that way, it sounds like I have some sort of like moral conviction about not going
That's what
to a
I was
specific
thinking.
Gallery. And I don't have anyone that sort of has urge in my book. I mean, right? They're all compromised.
Exactly.
So it's not like there's one that's more compromised than the other. I mean, of course there's degrees, but no, I think, again, like I said in the beginning, I'm actually trying to be better about this, but I really am so choosy about the stuff that I go see because I feel like a lot of the times I'm like sorely disappointed and end up just having really negative feelings about the field that we're in.
Yeah.
You know, this thing that I do all the time. I really remember when I lived in New York, Midtown and like even sort of the ground level galleries around like 57th Street and stuff. That kind of commercial, corny commercial gallery that probably like brings in so much money. That's of like my nemesis. Like they have like, you know, an edition Picasso that they've sold and resold like 5,000 times, you know, that's a place I really won't step into because it's really just a store. It's really like Sky Mall for paintings.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but other than that, I don't know. We never get to talk about this stuff. There's such like a silent wall around it, even as I'm being very general, because again, I don't have any, they don't call to me. I'm not like, oh, this gallery is like so on point all the time, because I'm constantly questioning like, what is my relationship to these spaces and what is it that, you know, what they propagate as it relates to art world and the market and capitalism and all of these things are things that I'm constantly sort of investigating and feeling not so great about in my own work. So it's more general. And there's a lot of mediocre stuff. I mean, that's the other truth. Like, you just know you're going to see.
How do you know if work is good?
That's a really good question. This is something I think about all the time and talk about all the time. So apologies to friends who've heard me go on this rant. But it's, you know, it's hard to say because, of course, right? Like, once something is put in a space and someone is sort of like underlining it by it sort of championing it, you get into this place of, well, that now an arbiter of taste has decided that this is good. So it's good. And that's the end of the conversation. But I think so often, especially in the contemporary moment, there is this thing that I talk about, I say all the time, which is sort of things that look like art.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's really easy, I think, to make something look like art. It's much harder to make something that can sort of satisfy whatever that is, because it is this sort of ineffable thing. What does it mean that it looks like art? But you know exactly what I mean when I say that.
Oh, yeah.
But so much of what you encounter falls in that category. So I think that if you kind of discount all of that, then there's not that much good art.
Yeah. No. So it's got to have like some spirit to it. Like something inside that facade.
I mean, I think so. I, you know, obviously not for anyone and everyone. I think a lot of people just like still to this day have like a real boner for like objecthood and like materials done right. And that's enough. But like, you know, the world's on fire and like going to hell. Like I want someone to like reach across the fucking void and grab me. And it doesn't have to be like a slap in the face. It can be subtle or it can be a gesture or whatever. But at this point, like that's my bar.
Shit. Okay.
It's hard. I don't know that I clear that bar most days, you know. Deep anxiety in art making to be like, wow, this is what I want work to do, and I don't know that I ever do it. But I don't know. I really do feel like we are in such a fucked place where everything is just so, like, it's almost like mediocrity got taste. And so it can really cloak itself as, you know, something that's been approved by the market or the institution or whatever. And then we can't emperor's new clothes it. We can't sort of, you know, break it open and see like that there's probably nothing inside, or that what's inside maybe is not meaningful or beyond that, because meaning is another complicated thing, but that maybe its position is complicated, right? We never think about that. Who made this work? And, well, that's a whole nother question. But anyway.
I have to reevaluate my practice.
You
now.
Don't. Yeah, I'm you don't. Hard. I'm not even here blowing smoke up your ass. I'm like sitting in your studio right now, and you're so fucking good.
Another question we had in from the listeners is what to do. This actually kind of chimes right in with that, but maybe if you have social advice for what to do if you hate a show that all your friends loved.
That's hard. Just dovetails with like another question sort of about where you say these things and where you express these sentiments,
yeah,
right?
Because all about it.
Because you can like subtweet your friends and be like, that show sucked, like on Facebook. And that's really different than saying it to their face. But you know, I think if there's a show that you don't like and your friends like, it's even more important that you say that sucked. And, you know, come correct. Like, don't just say that sucked and, like, walk out. Like, have thought about why it sucked, you know, because maybe it didn't suck. And maybe the reasons you didn't like it are things that you need to evaluate in yourself. But I'm going to guess that more often than not, that's not true. And if, I don't know, we're so afraid of being gutsy, I think, in the art world, right? Because everything has to be so neat. So I don't know if something,
and everything's so kind of vague, and like,
yeah,
a lot of things I like, I'm not even always totally sure how to
absolutely
articulate
absolutely
like them.
exactly. But I think that it's for like the health of a good arts ecosystem, we need to say, hey, I don't like this.
Yeah.
And the reasons why. It can be formal, it can be conceptual, it can be it's a shitty white guy being a shitty white guy. Mm-hmm. Like, these are important things to call out. And I really suspect that at the end of the day, if you get any flack for it, it'll be like, like a day or two. Everything happens so fast. You know, like tomorrow there will be another thing on Facebook that everyone's screaming about. So your like transgression against the art world will be forgotten.
Are you thinking about leaving Facebook at all?
Oh my God, all the time.
Me too.
I'm going to bring up Carrie Hott like 50 times today.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And she quit Facebook. Big time. I talk about her with her all the time. Like I check in with her. I'm like, how is it? Uh-huh. Almost like expecting her to be like, I miss it now and I'm coming back. But no, she's like a happier person.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. The fucked up thing is, why can't I leave it?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I should. I know I've read every goddamn think piece about how it's literally killing my brain and reshaping my molecules to like make Zuckerberg fuel. I need to stop, but I can't. And the reason I give people, which is totally horseshit, is like, well, you needed to promo your shit. Like, how are people going to know that I'm having a show?
Yeah.
And that's true to a degree, but I honestly don't know how many people actually go to anything because of Facebook.
That's kind of my, like, scapegoat of why I stay on, because I'm running the Facebook page.
Yeah.
And those three people that like our posts, they need to be so let down.
They need to know. I know. Our band page is also, like, a weird... I probably shouldn't say this, because it's, like... boosting our number of likes, but we have a lot of them are bots. So I think there's this cross section between like Chucha Santa Maria and then the performer that the group is sort of named after, is this woman Chucha, and she's from Brazil. So a lot of like Brazilian accounts will just like send me like an emoji or a weird Christmas video, or they'll tag us in like family pictures. I actually have sort of an ongoing non-project where I just store those, because it's like hundreds and hundreds of like people's pictures that
That's awesome.
Have been tagged to our band.
How odd.
I know. But actually, I learned, don't feel bad. It's the algorithm favors, like, they want you to pay for views.
Yes, exactly.
So they actually bury your stuff.
I hate that.
I know.
So you shouldn't. I almost paid for one once, but then I just.
But
was
then
like,
it says sponsored content.
Exactly.
And then you're
That's why
a goon.
I didn't do it. Yeah. And I thought Mason would be mad at me for giving money to Facebook. Yeah.
Oh, that's true. You would be. And they make it seem so like, oh, it's just like a nickel.
I know. We should go over there.
Get a residency.
Would you do it?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. Damn, dude. Like, I mean, that's a lot of money, but like, that's a really. You know, I feel very lucky that so far in like my sort of career as I quit my job a couple years ago to just be artist full time. And in that time, I've managed to kind of cobble a living together. But I've never had something like that come up where it's like a real ethical gauntlet. And yeah. I don't think I could do it, because a lot of people I know who've done it, I've heard really negative things about it. Like, the culture of the place is really toxic.
Oh, yeah.
And I think completely antithetical to what I'm about.
Yep.
I'm not in any... I can't give them what they want, though, so I'm not... That's never going to happen. That's sort of my cover for everything. Like, I can't give the art market what it wants, so it doesn't call me.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. It's cool for my, like, ethical health.
Yeah. If you don't have the option to do bad things, you feel very like ethically
totally.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh man, other hot goss or some kind of thing. The lab was just about to get their building bought. Speaking of buildings, they've been added to the Legacy Businesses Registry.
I didn't know that part. And that makes the sale more difficult.
Yeah, that gives them like some kind of special clout with the city where they're like a special guy and like.
That's awesome. Special guy on the corner.
Yeah. And then I think also.
Standing his ground.
Yeah. Somebody's going to like maybe also help them buy the building.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. That's cool.
That'd be amazing. I saw Dina the other night, Monday night.
That's Dina Beard,
Dina Beard.
ED of the lab.
And I had asked her about it. It was right before a talk, so she was sort of running around. But she seemed really positive about things. And
was it the Martine Sims?
Yes, it was.
How was that talk?
It was really good. She is, like, incredible, brilliant hero. I have to say,
the moderation wasn't super
And that great. Was Jim Voorhees, a.k.a. James Voorhees, who's the new Dean of Fine Arts at CCA.
So, full disclosure, I don't know him because I went to CCA many moons ago.
Okay. He just became the new one.
Okay.
He was the curator at the gallery at my undergrad.
Oh, wow.
Which was
So you really know him.
And we all went in different directions, and now all of a sudden we're back together.
Cool.
Yeah, but...
This is a nice reintroduction. I don't know. She's so interesting. There's so much about that work that I connect to on this, on many levels, right? Like, as a black body, as a femme body, as a body that exists on the internet, these are all things that I wanted to hear more about. And I know that she's very careful about how she tackles identity issues, which I also really respect because it's something that I think I try to do in my work as well. Like, I don't want to underline it. So maybe that was sort of deliberate that we circled around it. But I also feel like that kind of fell on moderation, that it just wasn't, you know, and it's framed under this thing about, like, again, the exhibition as medium. So it had this very curatorial bend to it. So we talked a lot about, they talked a lot about the sort of formal concerns of an exhibition. But I just feel like there was so much to chew there with the work itself, and we never really got to it.
Have you ever moderated something?
No. So I can imagine it's terrible. Like, it's hard work.
Oh, I guess I did once. I was going to say neither have I.
This kind of is like a moderation, what you do here.
Oh, yeah. I like when me and Maysoon do interviews because I feel like we'll just ask the question and then shut the hell up. JK to all my interviewer friends out there that really like to editorialize. Okay. Speaking of artists, I really just wanted to talk to you. We have a segment called Studio Corner.
Oh, yeah.
And I really would love to hear about how you physically organize your space.
Okay.
What kind of chair you sit in. If you sit.
Okay.
Let's get right to that. Do you ever sit?
I sadly am seated most of the time.
Me too.
It's horrible.
How's your back?
My back's fine. It's my hip flexors that are like a mess.
That'll mess
as a result. I have a really good chair that I obtained through dubious means.
Oh.
It's like a $500 chair.
Whoa.
Someone was giving it away, but I don't think they knew it was a really good chair.
Awesome.
They were rich, guys. It's fine.
So wait, can you describe that chair visually?
Okay. It's very I was going to say it's very Matrix-y, but then that makes it sound like it's one of those horrifying gamer chairs.
I imagine something that has a thing that comes all the way up and goes on top of your head.
That would be amazing. But it almost does. It's like, it's up to my neck and it has this sort of webbing of plastic on the back.
Oh.
And then the bottom part is really comfy and it has a bunch of knobs that I don't know how to use. It's literally three knobs. It's super Swedish design, whatever, but it's dumb.
I can perfectly visualize.
But it really helps because I had like ye old timey office chair before and that really messed up my back.
Do you ever have snacks in the stewed?
Oh my God, all the time. But I live work, so it's really dangerous because food is a really great way for me to procrastinate. I like to cook, so if I'm feeling, if I have a very bad kind of project looming over me, I'll be like, oh, let me make a really elaborate meal
now.
Snacks, this is another shout out to Carrie Hott. She and I have been hanging out at her studio. We were working on grant applications together and helping each other out. And we ate so many tangerines and string cheese. That was our fuel. And it's funny because she didn't ask me. She just had that. And that's two of my go-to art snacks.
That's a good one. That's healthy.
Yeah, I guess. When you've eaten three string cheese in a row, though, dude, there's nothing healthy about it. And it doesn't feel right. It don't feel right. I probably should stop eating dairy, honestly.
It's just not meant for us.
No, I know. No. I know, but I love it. Mm-hmm. I'm literally going to eat ice cream for dinner today. I made that decision. So, and then almonds, which I think is the most basic bitch artist snack.
Yeah.
But it works.
You got a salted almond or a honey roast?
Oh,
or
just salted. I'm a dry salted.
Yeah.
You know, I try a raw almond once in a while because apparently they're healthier. And I'll eat two of those because they suck.
then when it comes down to it and you're making the work, mm-hmm. now how's that done?
Okay. So my studio life is really tricky and a little precarious.
You're doing all kinds. You're taxiderming.
I am. I know. I really am. And I'm not doing that. So again, like I said before, I have a live work. So I'm not taxidermy at home. I have a dog also.
Are there
also.
Chemicals then?
No, actually, taxidermy is very chill. Okay. For a while, people were doing weird formaldehyde stuff. But the way that it's done now is very much so. Very much so. That's not right. Very much how it was done in its sort of origin. So it's stuffed with like wood chips. You clean the pelt with borax, which is relatively non-toxic as toxic things go. So it's cool. But no, the way it works is so my live work is really tiny and it has to be many things at many times. So I built out this huge table that half of it is sort of my studio table. The other half is like our dining room table. And then that kind of moves around in the space. So right now we're working on a new album. And so all of our music gear is on top of it, which means that my actual production area is really, really tiny. But the good news is that I have been away on residencies for a lot of last year. And all of the work that I'm unpacking and dealing with is video and sound editing. So it actually works that I have, that this is sort of the time that I'm working on this. Other than that, I kind of have to bank on residencies at this point because that's how I get access to space that's really big to work on taxidermy or work on installation. I mean, it's funny because I'm an artist that works with a relatively big scale, but I don't have the space to actually produce this most of the time. And that's because I can't afford it, you know? Like, part of the reason I can live in the Bay and not have a full-time gig is because I have this live work, but the live work is tiny. So it's kind of this balancing act.
You're making it work.
I'm trying. You know, there's some days where it's like, I wish I had a space I could just go to and just, like,
airplane hangar.
Oh, my God, that'd be amazing. Yeah, because you would make much bigger work if you had that much space. And it's sort of, I feel a little bit kind of, there are days when I'm like, wow, like, how am I limiting myself? But at the same time, it's a balancing act. And I think that, for me, the value of having my kind of whole brain be dedicated to this is more valuable than kind of having to split it up with a full-time job.
Fuck yeah. Okay, so on the collaboration tip, how's that work?
How does it work?
Because so you're living with your partner.
Yeah.
Are you guys married?
We are married. It's funny. This is a side note. We got married really young, and now I'm kind of like anti-marriage. I'm anti-everything. So I'm always like, Matt, let's get divorced but stay together. Like, we'll be the exact same couple. We just aren't married. I'm not doing this anymore.
How does he take that?
He is like, that's so weird. People who do that are weird. I tried branding it. I was like, we can be like old friends. And he was like, no, that's terrible. That sounds like sexless nightmare.
I wouldn't take that well.
I'm not, you know, it's funny. I adore him. He is my person. He's
very handsome.
He is everything to me. I'm just not a romantic, you know, so I was never this person who, like, as a kid was like, I'm gonna get married and all of these sort of, especially as a woman, right? Like, you're sort of gendered to have this like stupid like romance fantasy of marriage. So I just never, it wasn't something I sort of factored into my life. And when I say old friends again, I want to be really clear that what I mean is sort of, I have a really great friend whose parents have been together like 50 years, I want to say. It could be less than that. But they have like 3 kids. They're brilliant academics. They have this like glorious life and they just never got married.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I also just feel like, my resistance to marriage has nothing to do with my personal situation. It's just sort of like around the kind of heteronormative, sort of very like patriarchal and business minded way that it's sort of been organized.
It's
right?
Pretty
like,
weird.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, it's a good business deal. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I get a break on my taxes. Like, that's silly. That said, I adore Matt. We're not gonna get divorced. I tell this to everybody and everybody gets really scared. I told his parents recently over dinner. I was like, guys, I'm trying to convince Matt, and they were like, you're actually fucked up. No, we're not gonna get divorced, guys, don't worry. No, it's tricky being partner, lover, collaborators.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
but and it's something I have to say that for many years I assumed
it couldn't happen. Like, the idea to collaborate came to me sort of in the middle of grad school, as it happens. I was having sort of a panic in my medium and didn't want to be a photographer exclusively or whatever. And I said, let's make an album. And he was a musician, and that's kind of how our collaboration started. But before that, anytime I kind of had an inkling to collaborate, I just like, well, I just really feel like if we do that, then we can't be this other thing. Like, we can't have this personal love relationship if we collaborate, because I just feel like, I don't know, there's no way that we're not going to get into fights and it's not going to be really personal in this other way. But I think because of the way it was born out of this kind of like urgency that came out of me feeling very out of place with my practice, something really wonderful happened. And we've discovered that we have, as everybody does, we have limitations and sort of our skill set and our practice, but that when we bring those together, this third thing happens. And that third thing is super powerful and really great. That third thing being our music. But I don't know, it's been a real gift. And it's taught me so much about working with other people, and Lord knows the things that I need to work on with myself. I'm very, very impatient. And when it's just me, right, I can sort of chastise myself to the ends of the earth till the project gets done. But it's not okay to do that to someone else. No. And it's definitely not okay to do that to your partner. So, you know, we've definitely had sort of our run-ins, but I have to say, like, it's never been anything catastrophic or end of the world. Usually it's one of us defending a song or something. Oh. Like, oh, this is the thing I want to keep. And the other one's like, oh, it's not that great, and we have to get rid of it. And, you know, it's this magical thing. If you can do it, I recommend it.
Right on.
Yeah.
Now, you're a Virgo, right?
I sure am.
Me too.
Yeah, Virgo's hard because I feel like as a kid growing up and like, you know, you're a Virgo or whatever, my mom would like do our charts and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And she... You know, Virgo is always tasked with like being organized and intelligent, like, and all of these things that I just like, I don't think of myself as organized at all.
Me either.
I don't think of myself as a stickler, although I am. That's the thing. And as I age, like, oh, I am all of those things. Mm-hmm. And I kind of arrived at this place where maybe I'm not organized by way of like, someone sent me like a meme about Virgos where it's like, Virgo will organize your Tupperware. And it's like, hell no. Like, I'll just rather die. I'll throw them all out before I organize them. But I do feel like, especially as it pertains to my practice, I'm very Virgo in that my practice is a wealth of fucking chaos, both like in terms of ideas and in terms of material. Like, I just like, what's next? I'll work with that. And so for that chaos to make sense, I do need to have sort of a tight parameter on that. And I think that comes from being very Virgo.
They're also supposed to be perfectionists.
Yes, which I am.
Yeah, right?
I feel
like all the criticality and all that stuff.
Oh my God. It's the worst being a Virgo though, because you're like always on your own ass.
Yes.
You're like the worst to yourself.
And I'm not empowered by a naked virgin woman.
At all. I am like distraught by it. Like, everybody gets cool things, like a crab or a fish. A fucking ram.
Scorpions, I know. Scorpions have claws and a stinger.
And beyond being like a cute lady with like a sprig of wheat, she's a fucking virgin. Like, she's valued for her like chastity. Uh-huh. And it's just like, no.
And when I tell people that, they get mad at me.
Really?
They're like, it's a naked woman is very empowering. And I'm like,
wow.
Cool to say that when you're a fucking centaur. Okay. You know what I mean? Okay, anyhow.
I'm imagining like a literal hot centaur being like, it's empowering.
Yeah. I don't get it.
Oh, man.
Okay, do you live in San Francisco?
No, I live in Emeryville, California.
Oh, wicked.
I don't ever say that, though. I say I live in Oakland.
Well, on your way there, you can keep your eye out from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been Congratulations, Pine Tree.